Donald Trump became America's most prominent felon on Thursday when a New York jury convicted him on 34 bogus counts of falsifying business records. That verdict has proven predictably controversial. New York's case against Trump has attracted bipartisan criticism ever since Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg indicted the former president last year. Of all the cases brought against Trump, New York's charges have always looked both the least solid and the least serious. Nevertheless, convict him they did. Joining us now to bring us an analysis of the verdict is constitutional law expert Paul Kaminar. He is lead counsel for the National Legal and Policy Center based in Washington, D.C. Mr. Kaminar is a public policy and appellate attorney who counsels clients in legal, regulatory, and public policy matters. As an appellate attorney, I can't wait to talk appeals process with him. Paul, thank you for joining us tonight. It's nice to have you on the show, my friend.
Yeah, thank you for having me, John. My pleasure.
So, Paul, was this a criminal trial or a political persecution? Because it sure seemed to me like it was the latter.
Yeah, it certainly was, in my opinion. I mean, this case was a farce from the very beginning. Keep in mind that the prosecutor here, local DA Alvin Bragg, ran for office vowing to get Donald Trump. So it started out with that kind of a political motive to bringing the case. And then he didn't do anything as prior predecessor didn't do anything about the case. It was only until Donald Trump decided to run for office that they decided to go after him. So we have it starting with a political vendetta, so to speak, and it was motivated that way, and it came through during the whole trial. You had the judge, Juan Merchan, who has donated money to the Biden campaign and a committee whose mission is to stop Republicans. That right there should have caused him to recuse himself from the case. I've never heard of a judge giving political contributions, let alone to the opponent of the guy who's he's had before him in a criminal trial.
Right.
So that was amazing. And he said, no, I'm not getting off the case. Then the trial itself was replete with all kinds of errors in terms of the judge not sustaining objections by the defense on testimony by the prosecution witnesses like Stormy Daniels, who let her go on and on about the salacious details of her encounter or rendezvous with Trump that was totally prejudicial to Trump and had nothing to do with false business entries. And then the biggest error that I see was the jury instructions. I mean, it wasn't until the end of the case that the prosecutor finally revealed to the jury, oh, by the way, in order to find Donald Trump guilty, you have to find that these falsified business records was done to cover up one of three different other crimes that are felonies.
Right.
And take your pick.
Yeah.
As if this is a cafeteria menu.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Paul. How? Explain to me how that works, because, you know, those of us who spend a night at a Holiday Inn Express and think we're lawyers or watch an episode of Law and Order all know that concept of unanimous, jury must be unanimous. And yet here we have this case where the jury can disagree, and yet the judge considers it unanimous. Will we ever know how the jury voted? Will we ever know how this played out? How did they get to this? How is that even legal?
Right. Yeah, no, good question. Yeah, the only way we would know what happened in the jury room is if the media or reporter gets to a couple of jurors and asks them to explain how they got to their conviction.
Isn't there a jury sheet? I kept talking, you know, some of the commentators were talking. Will they release that, or is that
jury sheet? Yeah, jury sheet was a very simplistic thing where they had listed the 34 counts that were all the same counts, you know. Did he falsify records? And in the right column, it has you check the box either guilty or not guilty. So once you found him guilty of one, it's just a matter of repeating it 33 other times.
Okay.
So it was a no-brainer. But there wasn't any sub-boxes to check. Which of the three felonies are you basing this on? And we would never have known, but in any event, if they split different ways, the judge would still say it doesn't matter. He's still guilty. So
but how is that legal if they disagree?
Well, we don't think it is, and we will certainly find out in the Court of Appeals, if not there, the Supreme Court. Now, the government says, well, this has been a law on the books here in New York. It's never been really challenged in the federal court or Supreme Court. They're claiming that, well, you know, you don't have to find that whatever the ultimate cover-up crime was, as long as you think he had falsified records for this crime. So it's kind of a stretch, to be sure. I mean, they said, well, it's like when you charge someone for breaking into a house with the intent to commit another crime. So they're saying breaking into the house is a crime, but it's an aggravated crime and a felony if you intend to commit another crime, such as robbing the house.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, whatever. And they said we don't have to say what that other crime was. But here, it's not the same level of that kind of a crime, because the judge specified there are three different crimes that he could have committed. And what the prosecutor is saying and what the media is saying is that, oh, his ultimate crime was to violate the Federal Election Campaign Act by influencing the election. Well, first of all, that was only one of the three choices. So we don't know whether they picked that one or whether they picked the one that said the business records were falsified for evading New York or federal tax laws. So they could very well have said that. But the way it's being spun by the prosecutor and the media is that this was done to violate federal election laws. All right, so let's assume it was. That was the reason why they chose that. Why is that doesn't hold up? Doesn't hold up principally because under our election laws, a candidate can spend as much money as he wants of his own money on his own campaign.
Right, exactly.
Whether it's to hire staff, whether it's to buy computers, or whether to buy new suits so it makes them look good on the campaign trail, or whether it's to pay for a non-disclosure agreement so that the information doesn't come out that makes him look bad.
Right. If it's his own money, he can do anything he wants with it.
That's right. There's no limit. And if you look at the jury instructions, which I have, under the paragraph about federal election law, it says it is a violation of the federal election law for someone to give more than $2,700 to a candidate. Well, that's true for the average Joe. So the jury might say, well, let's see, $130,000 for the non-disclosure agreement. Yeah, that's more than $2,700. So, yeah, that's what he was trying to violate. But wait a minute. He's not subject to the $2,700 limit.
Right.
As a candidate. So the whole thing is a mess.
Yeah, I know. When I ran for the House, the limits for Kansas House reps is $500, and I donated $2,500 to my first campaign. So technically,
there you go.
If I were in New York, I'd be guilty because we're talking with Paul Kaminar. He's lead counsel for the National Legal and Policy Center. Paul, let's talk sentencing. Sentencing is scheduled for July 11th, and looking at how this judge handled the trial, is there any doubt in your mind that Trump won't get jail time here?
Yeah, I think he probably will get some time because he already was found in violation of the judge's gag order, and the judge finally said, look, you do this again, I'm going to throw you in jail. So he's already shown that he's willing to do that. But even if Bragg asks for jail time, and even if Mershon decides to impose it, I have really no doubt that that will judgment be stayed pending appeals. So what
and the appellate
do
court
is,
does that, right?
Well, Mershon can, but the way you do it procedurally is you first ask the judge, okay, Your Honor, you impose a sentence. Can you put a timeout on this from having it go into effect while we go on appeal? He can either say yay or nay. If he says nope, I want him to report to prison next month after, and it may be something else, maybe home detention, maybe probation, whatever.
Right.
Then you go to the Court of Appeals of New York and say, hey, look, could you put a timeout on this while we appeal the underlying conviction and sentence? And if they say no, we're going along with Mershon, then you go to the Supreme Court and say, hey, look, you guys need to issue a timeout for both these lower courts because we have some serious legal arguments, and it doesn't make sense for our client to be carrying out a sentence if his conviction is ultimately going to be reversed. So he may do that. He may also do something like saying, he can impose, by the way, under the law for this particular crime up to 4 years. So he may say, I hereby sentence you to 1 year in prison, but I will stay that sentence and put you on probation for 2 years, meaning that if you violate any terms of your probation, then I'm going to come back before me and then I'll carry out the imprisonment sentence. So there's various ways that this can go down, but in any event, I don't see, even if he imposes jail time with Trump's thing a day, behind bars or in home detention and keeping him off the campaign trail, whatever, until the appeal runs out.
And how long can that take? I know we're coming up on a break here, but how long? This whole thing, we're well past the election. We're talking probably end of the year, next year.
Well, yeah, the appeal will go well into next year in terms of briefing and having the oral argument and then filing a decision. So this will go well into next year.
Shame any Christmas. Yeah, well, folks, buckle up. It's going to be a while. Paul, thank you again for joining us this evening. If folks want to, sure. You've got a lot of articles that you've written on this and other topics. If folks want to check those out, they can find it at nlpc.org, correct?
That's correct. That's our website. I appreciate any support we can get. We're a small organization, but we go after the bad guys and hope we can keep our work going on.
Appreciate you. Thank you again for joining us, my friend. Nice to have you on the show again.
Thank you. Anytime, John.
Thank you,
Take
Paul.
Care.